Welcome back to the another episode of Be Remote Podcast. I'm your host Pushpak, and today we have with us Megan. Megan is a VP of Engineering at HelpScot. Welcome to the show, Megan. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing well today.
Awesome, awesome. So let's start with a short introduction about you and like what you do at HelpScot.
Yeah, I'll keep this really short. So I am the VP of Engineering at HelpScout. I've been working with HelpScout for the last 5.5 years, and 2.5 of those years have been in my current role. I've been leading engineering teams since 2004 and managing remote or remote hybrid teams in some capacity since 2007. So I've been doing this for a while. I love working remote. I love empowering people to be the best team and version of themselves that they can be. And I'm very passionate about leaving the tech world better than I found it, particularly for anyone with identities in the margin.
Awesome. So I'm really curious to know, as we talked earlier as well, like you're from USA and you're staying in Italy. Like most of the people I know, like they moved to USA to work in, you know, tech. So like why you chose to move back to Italy and all these things? Curious to know about this.
Sure. I knew coming into HelpScout that it was a remote company, and I was looking to just change locations. I was living in Portland, Oregon. Was looking for a change, and my partner and I started considering different areas around the world, and we had a friend who suggested Italy as a place to try out. There's lots of hiking and mountain biking trails, which is something that I really enjoy, especially up in the northern part of the country. Yeah. So we made the leap, and now we're there, and luckily being remote, this is not a difficult thing to manage when it comes to time zone and working with a team.
Yeah, so actually that was my next question I wanted to ask you. Like your team, like most of your team must be in USA, right? And you are in Italy. So how do you manage your meetings, and how do you, you know, sync up with your team? How do you take scrums and all, like, because you guys are in different time zones, right?
I don't have the exact numbers offhand, but we have, I think something like 60% of the company is in North America. Mm-hmm. And then everybody else is somewhere else. We do tend to have not necessarily core hours across the company, but we have people as far east as Eastern European time zone. And that stretches over to the west coast of the United States. However, we also have people in Australia. Mm-hmm. So that is sort of the one outlier in our time zone.
Okay. So how do you manage your team? Like you are the VP of engineering at HelpScot, and you're the tech leader in the company. So how do you manage your team remotely? That's like must be the challenging part, right? So how do you do it?
Sure. I guess I'll just start by mentioning that HelpScout had a bit of an advantage going into the pandemic. You know, we've been a remote company since the beginning, so we weren't having to learn anything new when it came to working.
Right.
So while we had to manage the stress of the global crisis, we were pretty lucky because we were just pros at remote collaboration. As a company, we default to asynchronous communication. So we make heavy use of Slack, Dropbox paper for documentation. We use videos a lot. So meaning video recordings. So if we have to share something, either a team meeting or we're explaining how, you know, the design of a new feature, we'll record it. And usually in Loom is one of the tools of choice that people use, and then share it publicly and broadly within Slack. We encourage communication to happen in public as much as possible, so everybody has the context across the team. One thing we have implemented is core team hours. So each team across the organization is allowed to designate their 4 core hours. So depending on where people in the team live, there's 4 hours that you're always going to be available for meetings, or you know, being able to hop on a call or discussion about anything. And that helps a lot. We do not require that people sit within a certain time zone on the team, but we do have conversations about it. So we try to be intentional about where people on the team live. And if we have someone who's an outlier, like everybody is between the East Coast of North America and maybe Europe, if there's one person sitting over on the West Coast, we might have a conversation with them and make sure that they are okay with the work-life balance that is, you know, will be interrupted in order to work their team core hours. So on top of managing time zones, as a company, we've committed fully to using OKRs, so objectives and key results. I think it's a great tool. A lot of people might roll their eyes at it, but implemented well, I think it's very powerful. We can agree on the objectives. We're all aligned. So from a leadership position, like I know that if the KRs are hit and we're getting like, you know, roughly, you know, somewhere between 70 and 90% of those objectives, I know that people are doing the right work. Like I don't have to manage the details. I don't need to, you know, get into the how. I'm just caring about the what. And that's pretty powerful because it provides a lot of autonomy for the teams to, you know, figure out the implementation.
Totally makes sense. So actually I wanted to know about, you said video parts, you communicate through video, like by making video. So like, so you don't do like daily scrums and all, or if you want to explain something to someone, like, your colleague or someone, like, or maybe a developer. So how, like, do you like get on a call with them? Or as you said, like you do videos as well, you make videos. So how do this works actually? So I wanted to know about this.
I think we use every tool or medium at our fingertips, right? So if it's something really small or maybe you know, has a lot of detail, we'll probably write something down. So put it in paper, maybe in Slack, depending on if it's ephemeral or if it needs to be saved. And we might start there and then ask for a call if people's time zones align and that can work out. But usually that's only if you need to have some sort of back and forth. If you're really just sharing something, then usually recording a short video and dropping it in the team channel is going to be successful. Like people love to interact with videos and hearing someone explain the work that they're doing, I think is more powerful than just reading about it. But say it depends on the situation.
So because, you know, why I'm asking this, because I have observed this, I have personally observed this, like some of the managers in my company, they wanted to explain something to their intern, but they're not understanding it, you know, at a one time. So they have to explain them repeatedly, you know, again and again, and then they get kind of pissed off, like some people take time to understand things, right? So this is a good idea, like just create a video, explain everything, and they can watch video like multiple times, right? So manager won't have to worry about explaining again and again. So this is a really good insight.
A great point.
Any unique experiences you had like while working remotely, like by talking to your colleagues, like, you know, like maybe some like as I explained to you, like suppose someone made some mistake and like any miscommunication or like any unique experience you had while working remotely and what you learned from it, like maybe some, if something comes to your mind.
Sure. I'm not sure if unique would be like, I don't know if I could come up with a unique thing, because I think all of us as humans, as we're working remotely, like we sort of run into the same challenges. I think, you know, miscommunication happens all the time. Failure happens all the time. And I think the superpower in order to deal with it is vulnerability. So being able to acknowledge that, like, oh, something happened, something went wrong, there was a miss. So acknowledging that and having a very like transparent conversation with whomever you experienced this miscommunication with or failure with, and, you know, moving on and sort of committing to move on together can be a really powerful tool. I personally believe that vulnerability and trust are key ingredients for a successful team and company. So I lean very hard into building that. I talk about my mistakes publicly. I share them with the entire organization. I think demonstrating that I can fail regularly and talk about it and talk about how I'm moving on is I'm trying to demonstrate the behavior I expect to see across the whole team. I think that works well for managing a lot of situations, because the more trust and vulnerability you have amongst the team, the easier it is to recover from, you know, anything that goes sideways. So while I don't have like a unique example there, there's several that happen, I feel like, on a daily basis that, you know, because you can have that, the trust and respect and vulnerability, it just makes it easier to get work done.
So what kind of challenges do you face while working remotely?
So I think our biggest challenge is not dissimilar to everyone else's big challenge remotely. Zoom is not the best way to communicate as humans. You know, we do a lot better communicating in person where you can read all the body language and the energy. Also, you don't have the weird interruptions and having to wait to see if someone's going to go. So that's all, I think, a lot of people's biggest challenge, but or one challenge. I would say our biggest challenge is that it's been so long since we've had any in-person connection. Typically, you know, in the before times, we would get together every 6 months as a whole company. We'd go to some, you know, retreat somewhere, either in North America or in Europe. And we would spend a week doing a little bit of business focused work, but mostly just connecting and having fun. And I think that that relationship building and being able to see your coworker as a full human is deeply important for doing hard things together. So we try to recreate that as much as possible by being intentional about fun things for the teams to get together and do. We try to spend time just talking to our coworkers, not about work. We have a practice, we use a word that we borrowed from Swedish, which is called, which is fika, where we will just schedule random chats with people throughout the organization. We use a tool for it called Donut in Slack. And it just pairs you with different people randomly in the organization. You set up a 30-minute phone call. You talk about anything you want, but you can't talk about work, or you shouldn't talk about work. And you know, we have a channel in Slack where people might take screenshots and of the conversation and talk about, share what they talked about. So we definitely encourage people to, you know, share with their coworkers, connect, have some fun. I think that's very powerful.
Yeah, this is really helpful as well. Sounds great. So how does a day as a VP of engineering look like to you? Like, what do you do in a, you know, on a daily basis, basically?
Sure. Well, I guess the first thing I do is check Slack to see if there's anything urgent. I typically try to keep one very large strategic initiative on my plate during the quarter, and then maybe like two or three smaller boulders, you know, or rocks, like one boulder, couple rocks. And so every week I think through like, what are my top three priorities? Those are going to be, you know, the most important things that I could get accomplished that are going to serve my goals. Ultimately, you know, as a manager, you know, any sort of leader of any organization, like, your job is to, you know, deliver high value for the customer and set your team up for success. So with anything I'm doing, if I'm not actively moving the needle on either of those two things, I'm probably focused in the wrong direction. So for example, right now we are taking a look at our organization structure and our architecture and how we could better align those two things through domain-driven design. So I'm spending a lot of energy, you know, talking with our CTO, speaking with architects on the team, you know, speaking with our product management team and understanding like where they see the product evolving and their vision so that we can make sure that everything is in alignment. And I just keep that as my main focus for the week. And then sort of everything else just fills in. Like, I feel like there's sort of a constant noise from Slack. Maybe some constant noise from vendor, you know, managing vendors through email and then meetings. And I do have to admit, I feel like I spend most of my time in meetings. And while they all feel, I've done a thorough analysis of all the meetings. They are important. I have to have them. If I try to like take them out or make them shorter, things start falling apart. So I do feel like communication is the biggest part of my job. When I look at, I use rescue time to track everything that I do. And you can just see that, like, you know, 60% of my time is spent either in Slack or in Zoom calls. So that is, that's mostly what I feel I do for my job, is I talk. Talk and write.
Right. So that's what leaders do mostly, right? It's like convey the message and communicate properly, I guess. Yeah. So what's the one thing which you are curious about remote work, and where do you see the future of work, especially after the pandemic and all?
Sure. I think the thing I'm most curious about is what's going to happen with all of these companies who are trying to do a remote hybrid approach to work.
My
hypothesis is it's going to fail tragically. I think now that workers have been able to see how beautiful life can be if they don't have to commute, if they don't have to sit in an open office plan and be interrupted by coworkers coming by or what's going on in the break room, like, you're so much more productive and focused, and you can squeeze that into an amount of time that works to fit your life. And I don't believe that people are going to want to go back to the office. So as much as I love seeing my coworkers, my life is better working remotely. And I think that more and more people have discovered that. So yeah, my guess for the future of remote is that the practices will get better, the tooling will get better, the way that we approach leadership and collaboration will evolve. And I think all of the things that have been happening in the tech space, particularly around, just enablement and empowerment, shifting as much into the hands of the people doing the work as possible and giving them the autonomy to make decisions and work towards outcomes, I don't even see the need for, even the most micromanager of micromanagers, why do they need to see the human in the chair? You're going to be able to see the output of their work really clearly.
Why do you think remote hybrid could fail? Is there any specific reason?
I think mostly because people are not going to want to add the commute and the distraction back into their life. I believe it's a better way to run your life, particularly if you have children or you're a caretaker for anyone. There's just so much more flexibility in how people can run their schedules that I think that adds an amount of, I don't like the term work-life balance, because I feel like it's overused, but it just, the amount of control people have over how they spend their time is huge.
I think especially like for families, remote work is really helpful, so they can spend time with children and everything.
Absolutely.
So what did you learn from as a VP of engineering which you wouldn't have learned anywhere else? Is there anything like that?
I think anytime you step up in leadership, things get more and more nebulous. Like, as I've grown in my career, I don't feel like I have more clarity about anything. I feel like I have less. So ambiguity is high. So I've learned how to manage ambiguity, deal with ambiguity, and find comfort and actually come to love it. There's a saying that Nick Francis, our CTO, started using. He says, your job as a manager is to absorb ambiguity and spread clarity. So, and I really embrace that. And I try to keep that in mind. Whenever I'm speaking with anybody, I have to take into account they do not have the context I have. They might not have the same degree of comfort with ambiguity that I have. And I need to tailor how I speak and the information that I share to account for that. So that's probably the biggest learning, is like that as you grow in your career, things don't become more clear or easier. They just become like harder and more ambiguous, but you grow more skills in order to deal with it.
Awesome. So what are you into outside of your work? So you already told it, but would you like to go deep into that, like what you do outside of your work and like apart from mountain biking as well, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, oof, mountain biking really is sort of the deep passion. I actually took a break in my career. Prior to joining Help Scout, I spent 2 years trying to be a professional mountain biker.
Oh, that's
Yeah, I just dropped out of tech completely, and became a cross-country mountain biker. It was amazing. I traveled all over the United States and different countries as well. I did learn that I do not want to be a professional athlete. It wasn't for me. And so I did make my way back to tech, but that was a really glorious two year break. So other than mountain biking, I would say anything outside. Like I love jumping in water. So lake, river, ocean, like if I'm around it, you can't really keep me out of it. I think those are probably my two biggest passions, aside from learning. I think I love learning anything new about anything, from the smallest like random trivia fact to something deep, and going, I would have to go to school in order to learn it.
Awesome. So, what are your top three favorite books, like in terms of maybe business or fiction, non-fiction, anything which you really love?
Sure. I think my favorite professional book that I've read recently is Brené Brown's Dare to Lead. Yep, there was a lot that she said in there that really resonated, and I do try to take her advice and approach to heart, and truly like lead from a place of extreme or maybe radical vulnerability. My favorite book, just sort of around engineering team performance, is Accelerate, by Nicole Forsgren, Jez Humble, and Gene Kim. It's a very short book, and it talks about like what are the four key ingredients or KPIs for a high performing team. And I just really what they're saying is if these four things are true, your team is probably going to be motivated and engaged, and that's going to make them better employees, and that's going to make your company better. So it's sort of this virtuous cycle that they create just by trying to push these four metrics forward. So I really love that. And then there's several wonderful professional development books that I love and I always recommend. But from a fiction side of things, I love the book The Man Who Fell in Love with the Moon by Tom Spambauer. He's a Portland, Oregon author, and it's a very different book from anything I've ever read, and it made me think a lot.
Awesome, sounds good. I'll check this out. So what are you already mentioned it, but like how would you like what are your top three favorite remote tools which helps you work remotely smoothly basically?
Sure. So I did mention a couple software tools, which are important, but I actually think like more important than software tools are the environment that you're working in. So I have a nice large external monitor that I work with. I have a great chair that I don't notice. It's very comfortable. I use a Herman Miller Aeron chair. They've been around together forever. They're kind of the cliche chair, but like they're great. There's a reason why they're as popular as they are. And I also have a sit stand desk so that I can switch between sitting and standing throughout the day, and that sort of helps me focus. And I'm going to add a fourth one just because, good headphones. I think being able to hear well and have other people hear me well through a good microphone is important, and just being able to close out the world and listen to some good music while I'm working is important.
Yeah, totally awesome. So, is there any message that you have for all the engineering leaders all over the globe about managing teams, about managing their work? Is there any message?
That's a good question. I think I'm just going to repeat what I've already said, that you pick one or two things that are really important to you in order for, supporting your team and the business. In my case, I've decided that it's customers and the team. And if I'm focused on delivering value to the customer and value to the members on my team, then I'm doing my job well and everything else will just follow. Like, we will get more customers, our revenue will go up, we will be a more successful business. Like, I believe strongly it comes back to those two things. So find your focus, push hard on those and lean into vulnerability, because I think it is the most powerful tool for building trust on a team and allowing everybody to just move forward without the friction of, or I guess I would say without that relational friction that comes when you have a lack of trust.
Yeah, I think trust is like the most important thing which comes working remotely, because in India, remote work wasn't, nobody was working remotely, and people don't believe, trust each other. So there was some, you might have heard about it, this monitoring software. So some companies started using that, and toxic culture was happening because of this. So I think trust is really helpful in this thing. If you don't trust your employer, why you're working with them, So thank you so much, Megan. Your insights are really helpful for all of the people who are working remotely, and especially for the engineering managers. It was really great talking to you. Thank you so much for giving your time.
It was a pleasure.